Log Talk Radio.
That is the theme song of something that will show up in. Hopefully, there it is.
What is this?
Here, let's.
Looney Tunes comes to rebooting the news.
Well, this is the number one selling application in the iTunes App Store for the iPad. This is, turns out, what it will be used for.
And what's it called?
It's called, believe it or not, it's called Angry Birds. And the whole idea of Angry Birds is that they're really angry.
Oh, it's not just a plaything. They're actually angry.
They're totally, really, they're completely angry. And there are these pigs. And the reason that they're angry is because the pigs eat their eggs. And so the birds have decided that they have to kill the pigs.
And so that sounds exactly like my 8-year-old son, Rafi.
Oh, your son? I know your son. He would love it. All boys who have sisters would love this.
Well,
because
has a sister.
It's like a dollhouse, right? And your job is to destroy it in very interesting ways.
Mm.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is rebooting the news.
Yeah, it's not a girls' game, by the way. So I'm just going to leave this here, if you can believe it. Adrian wants me to do it. He wants me to move it a little bit further, like that.
Yeah, it's a little distracting.
Well, that's the idea, actually.
Oh, no. Mission accomplished.
Well, we tried this, actually, once before with Jeremy Zylar. And Jeremy, when he was a guest, I think you were out of town or something.
Yes.
And I had to turn it off because I couldn't really listen to you. I'll put it back on at the end of the game.
That's a good idea.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is Rebooting the News, number 54. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Jay. I figured I had to share that with you because remember a few weeks ago when the iPad came out and I handed it to you?
Yes.
This, you know, we were wondering what it would become of it. This is what,
this is what it's become. Yes.
It's the killer app. So, okay.
We have a lot of items to cover today.
I know. That wasn't even on the agenda.
Yeah, we're going to have to almost do a lightning round thing here because we didn't have a show last week.
Yes.
I was ill.
You're feeling better?
Feeling better.
That's good. You're looking well.
I'm looking good. It's summertime here. It's relaxed. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of cleared out and empty around here. So that leads to
this
good
is the
thoughts.
Way the school should always be. Like, no students. It's not bad.
Oh, I love it when the students return.
I didn't really mean that.
Let's get right to it. Dave, you were asked to visit the New York Times and talk to some people there. Tell us what happened.
Well, it was a conference, an internal conference they had called Digital Day. And the entire conference was off the record. But I figure whatever I said was not off the record because, you know, I didn't say anything that I haven't said a million times before here and many other places.
So what did you tell them?
I told them everything. And
you told them everything?
I literally, it was amazing. It's like after you give a talk like this, and it was a panel actually. I was on with Stephen Berlin Johnson and a couple of other people. And I checked with it was on new platforms for news. And I had checked with Martin, Martin Niesenholtz before because I didn't really like the topic because, you know, this is like a talk about new. What they were thinking was we would talk about iPads and, you know, Android and whatever, whatnot, which I think is kind of. See, that's kind of the problem is that the real new platform for the news is the New York Times, and it should be the New York Times. And
is that what you said?
Yeah, absolutely. And
in what sense?
Well, because that puts the finger on what the problem is. The platform for news shouldn't be coming from the tech industry.
Mm-hmm.
It should be coming from the news industry.
Oh, I can see why they might like that.
Well,
actually,
of course. And there was a whole bunch of other things that were said that I really can't talk about because other people said them and they were off the record. But they dovetailed in really well with the strengths that the Times have. They were talking about the weaknesses of the tech industry.
Mm.
The Times has very deep management, lots of experience, very intelligent people.
True.
And they really understand the news. And they asked me, so what is the thing that we don't have that these other companies have? And said, courage. These other companies are like the Angry Birds. They'll fling themselves into anything without a second thought. And, you know, they don't care what, you know, because Fred Wilson had been on just before, and I was on, and Fred was really on, and Fred was his most charismatic and And what I like about Fred so much is that he really is very direct and honest, and he's a leader of tech now, and unlike previous generations, he more or less tells you what he thinks. He doesn't tell you everything he thinks. He can't, you know.
Fred Wilson, partner in Unisquare Ventures, a venture capitalist in the tech industry who's invested in Twitter and other platforms.
There you go. Thank you. It was a little sidebar right there. And so, yeah. So, I don't know. I said that you don't... you have a printing press. You've always had a printing press in the basement. They used to have the printing press in the basement of the Times
building.
When they started printing a run, the whole building would shake. You know, now they have this huge factory out in Queens. Mm-hmm. So they have not delegated that in the print production era. They should not be delegating it here. This is a place where they ought to have control of their destiny, and they ought to be providing that to other people. That's their formula for growth.
Interesting. And, yeah. Safe to say it was a positive response?
Yes, it was a positive response, but I wouldn't say that was safe to say. I have been thrown out of rooms for saying things like this in other contexts and not in a very nice way. I mean, I gave a speech like that at Apple in 1989, which was one of the lowest years in the history of Apple Computer, and... about how they were not connecting with the outside world and how they didn't understand, you know, where they fit in, blah, blah. And I got such hostility from them. And the Times itself has reacted very negatively in the past to this kind of stuff. But
well, that's good.
It was very good. I felt coming out of it that, you know, even if they don't pick up or adopt any of the ideas, I can rest at least knowing that I have given them the best of my thinking.
Yeah.
At this point. And there were some very positive reactions, and there has been some follow through. So that's really exciting.
Totally cool.
Yeah.
Hey, did you see the news that Nate Silver is going to join forces with the New York Times? What do you think about that?
I think it's great.
Me too.
I do. I like Nate Silver. I love what he's done. You know, I consider him a prime example of sources go direct. I
mean,
here is a guy who. I doubt very seriously if any reporter thought of calling up Nate Silver in 2007 to find out what he thought of the presidential race, right? And yet, by the end of the race, he was a well-known political pundit, and he just inserted himself in the conversation. He said, I've got something to say here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was, by the time the Florida primary came around, he was the first place I was going. I don't know about anybody else, but...
Two things to add on that, Dave. The first is he picked up on a weakness in the news media, which was that since they had their own polls and they were in a promotional stance toward their own polls, they didn't care to examine in a comparative way what other polls were saying or to critique polling,
right?
Because they had this kind of stake in their own product, which he kind of picked up on and therefore was able to provide a perspective that was missing from the news system.
Right.
Second thing is very interesting to me was when the Times, I think the correct term is licensed 538, which is Nate Silver's site, rather than acquiring it because he still owns it. They licensed it and brought him into the Times in that way. They more or less tried to maintain the view from nowhere in the sense of they didn't deal with the fact that Nate's a liberal, which he's very open about. He doesn't try and suggest that he's coming from the clouds, right? He deals very fairly with conservatives and Republican candidates. It's very important to his site that he be objective in that sense because he's dealing with data. But there's no question that Nate's a liberal in addition to being an empiricist. And when the Times announced that they were doing this deal with him, that was just completely not spoken of as if it didn't even exist, which I understand, but it's interesting.
That is interesting.
The Washington Post has done similar things with liberal bloggers who made names for themselves, like Ezra Klein. and Greg Sargent. But this was the first time that the Times had done something
quite like
that.
What about Russ Douthat, or I don't know how to pronounce his
name. Yeah, well, but
he
came...
He's a blogger that was brought in as a columnist.
Yes,
no doubt
but he came in as a columnist. So I guess it's sort of similar, yeah.
And I think that... I think there's also... He's a freelancer or somehow... He's going to be writing for the Times Magazine, I think it was, Nate Silver.
Yeah, that's possible. That sounds about right.
Part of the
deal. We have an event coming up here next week. Yeah. Let's talk about it. It's called Sources Go Direct, and it's going to happen right here at NYU in our big public space, which we call the Commons on the 7th floor. Yeah. And it's part of Internet Week in New York, which is a big celebration of the Internet.
It's going on right now.
Which is happening right now. So tell us about it.
Well, it's going to be all about Angry Birds.
Angry Birds go
no,
direct.
No, it's not. The Angry Birds definitely go direct. There's no doubt about it. Well, it's the first time. Well, we've wanted to do this for a while. Both you and I think, have wanted to do this. I think it was time to do it. You know, to actually have a bunch of people get together and talk about this idea of Sources Go Direct. And so what I was looking for was, you know, people who exemplify it, people who think that it doesn't exist, and people who organize it. So I got one of each. I got what I talked about, Fred Wilson. Fred is the guy who does it, and Fred... I think can't think of a better example of
very effective blogger.
Yeah, and he's single-handedly changed his industry by doing what he does because, you know, VC used to be venture capital used to be a very clubby sort of thing.
Yeah,
and
opaque to the outsider.
Pretty much, and they had a lot of inside baseball. You know, they had a real church of the savvy. I mean, they were like. People would talk about the feeding frenzies, you know, that you could see it happening. I mean, there's these, and of course they still do, but now we can see them a lot more. I mean, the rest of us have some insight into what they're doing, and I think that this has had an incredibly positive impact on venture capital. I don't know what caused which, but you now have angel investing, you know, you have a lot of startups that are happening without any investment at all. And that the power has switched almost completely to the entrepreneur nowadays. So, and Fred is very comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred is taking the blogging attitude into his life and in the world. And I think he's done remarkably well with it. And I think it's been a very positive thing. And I feel like I know Fred, even though like I've, you know, probably sat down with him a dozen times,
mm-hmm.
no more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've sat down with him hundreds of times. He's
right.
written 5,000 blog posts.
At his
I've
blog.
Read most of them.
And the comments, which are very
and
accurate.
And the comments are unbelievable.
Yeah.
So then
one of the best comment sections I know of
yeah,
online.
And then we were looking for contrarian, and I thought immediately of Nick Denton. And Nick, because Nick, well, first of all, Nick is highly opinionated.
Yes.
And he's also highly controversial,
yes.
and specifically in relationship to how he uses sources. This whole thing is coming to a boil right now with Nick and Gizmodo and Apple. Steve mm-hmm. Jobs was on stage at the D8 conference last week where he specifically talked about Gizmodo and about bloggers and about how we can't let them run the world, and you know how opposed he is to this way of doing things. And
he also said he'd hate to live in a world with the bloggers take over, or something.
Well, that's
like
what
that.
I'm saying.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what I was talking to. And I you know, I would love to get Steve Jobs on the panel, but unfortunately, he's
love to get him on the show.
He's at the WWDC, which we're going to get to in a minute.
Yeah.
But and then
so Nick Denton is our contrarian,
and Rachel Stern of Ground Report is the organizer, and. She's taken many of the rebooting the news ideas and put them into practice on a global scale. Her, you know, sources, she's got 5,000 people who are at both editorial and contributors to the news flow. And what you end up with is something that looks very much like what a rebooted news website would be if they were actually
yes.
getting all the way there.
She's a key person in the rebooted system
yeah.
of news, absolutely.
And And so I don't, of the three of them, I know her the least, but I've certainly heard of her by reputation and have, you know, studied what she's been doing and really excited to have them all. The interesting thing is they're all New Yorkers, and they all are coming out of the New York tech community.
Right.
And so I hope this is the first of quite a few of these that we do over whatever period of time we have to do them.
But, yeah, you can imagine them at the same mixer.
Could imagine the three of them
at the same mixer in the New York tech community. They could
I've
show
seen
up.
Them actually at the same mixer.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
As a matter of fact, they.
So you're going to moderate with those three.
Yes,
and we have a sign up page which we'll put on the site.
Go.hypercamp.org is the place to go to for all the pointers. If you can be there, there are still some seats left. We're going to have a webcast. We're going to have an IRC. Chat room. We're going to have basically every, you can experience it every way, and then there'll be an MP3 and a video.
All right.
When it's all set
and what's happening after?
Then we're having an open newsroom. So the event itself will last an hour, 15 minutes. And after that, we've got, you know, refreshments, we've got Wi-Fi, we've got tables and chairs, and we've got bright people with laptops and schmoozing. And I don't know what happens at this open newsroom. The idea is that you put a bunch of these people together with their, you know, with refreshments, with some time, and with their laptops, and you see what happens. I don't know. The times that I've seen this happen when it wasn't done deliberately, okay, it's been pretty cool. I saw it once at an O'Reilly open source conference. This was like in 1998 or 99 in Monterey, California. And they had a computer room. But this was back before when people weren't typically carrying laptops with them to these conferences because networking wasn't that widespread. So they had this room with about 50 computers in it. And we were all sitting in the room. Doc Searles was sitting over here, John Udell over here, and there were people scattered all over the room that we all knew each other, basically. And I had this wonderful experience where I posted something about the event on Scripting News that was a joke, and I could hear people laughing. And I said to the room, any of you reading my blog? And they all said, yeah, we're all reading everything you're writing. And I go, oh, my God, this is really interesting. And so then we started divvying up the work in terms of, you know, because like as I'm blogging, because what I'm blogging about is what we were just seeing, because it was a bunch of news. Ted Nelson had been there and he was showing Project Xanadu. I don't know if you know Ted Nelson is one of the visionaries.
Yes, I remember reading about him.
He was one of my inspirations
back
in
the
early part when we were doing that. And so he gave a talk. It was very disappointing. It was really sad to see where, you know, Ted Nelson had ended
up. Well, we should get some visionaries to come to this open newsroom then.
Well, one would hope they all are visionaries, Jay.
Oh, man.
You
set
me up
so
for that one. You set me up. Come on. Yes, anybody you can think
so
of.
So impromptu press conferences might break out.
That was,
people might exchange roles from being sources to being chroniclers or reporters, right?
All which ways. The next time I saw it happen was at a press event that Microsoft had, and it was unbelievable. It just... Because they had put together, they had incredible Wi-Fi, they had unbelievable food, just unbelievable, really over the top. And it was in San Francisco at the Palace Hotel, very luxurious. Everybody decided to stay for like a couple
food
of hours.
Can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. And so who
All
knows?
Right.
Maybe nothing will happen. Maybe something wonderful.
Maybe everyone will just dissipate back into the streets of New York, which are tempting.
It could happen too.
Yes.
Because the weather is so nice. It's really so fine, you know. So.
Apple has WWDC this week.
Yeah.
What is it? Why do we care?
I don't particularly care. I mean, I used to go to WWDC back when I was an Apple developer in the 80s and early 90s. The people who go to that are Apple developers. They care a lot about what happens there because it's where they find out what Apple's changing in their platform and stuff. But it's also become a venue for product announcements for Apple. And,
so we're expecting a few of those.
Yeah, and because of the leaks that you know came out through Nick Denton and Gizmodo, we pretty much know there's a new iPhone coming today.
Right. And we know Gizmodo has been banned from this event.
Yes. Right. That won't make the slightest bit of difference in terms of the information we get, nor will it make a difference in what information Gizmodo provides. It's silly. They should let Gizmodo in.
It's kind of dumb, though.
Yeah. For dumb
them to do
for
that.
Apple? I think it is. Yeah. It's ridiculous. So
All right.
You know what it is? It's funny. I have a thought about this. Is that where was I reading? There was an article in CNET today about what happens to companies when they hit the pinnacle. You know, when they finally get to the place where they've been trying to get for all the their whole
well,
lives.
Apple is there.
Yeah. They go crazy.
Yeah.
And you can see Apple doing all the things that Steve Jobs has always wanted to do now, like the control, the tight control on apps.
Yeah.
The capricious way that they cancel apps.
Mm-hmm.
All this is stuff Steve Jobs wanted to do on the next platform. He wanted to do it on the Mac probably in the early days. When I wanted to be a next developer, he sent a message back to me saying, we can't let just anyone develop for this platform.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this is Steve Jobs going running amok. So anyway, there is also rumors of, and sounds pretty realistic, of a new input device that's a touchpad and handwriting recognition, and it replaces the mouse, maybe replaces the keyboard too, for desktop computers. So it's like the technology that's in the iPad and in the iPhone, but for the desktop. Sounds pretty good. Sounds like a product.
Do you think they'll announce anything that turns the iPad into more of a producer's tool?
No, I don't think the iPad is more of a producer's tool.
All right.
Not in this incarnation.
All right.
When they ship the iPad as a desktop computer, though, it will.
Okay.
And there's no doubt in my mind that day is coming too.
Moving right along.
Yeah.
We learned this week that this show, Rebooting the News, will be a live presentation at the next Online News Association meeting in October of 2010 in Washington, D.C.
That should be super fun.
Which should be really interesting because we can do the show not only with a live audience of people who are rebooting the news, but we can, of course, involve them in it.
Yeah, and we're officially on the program.
And we're officially on the program.
Yeah, we're no more of this guerrilla crap.
No more guerrilla. Like, we don't have to buy our own hotel room like we did last time.
Well, I unfortunately was not there for
that. Although so you got sick, so you couldn't do it, but that's what we ended up
doing. Actually, my dad got sick.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Your
Father's Day is coming up.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, whatever, yes.
But anyway, we'll be right there in the heart of the news profession.
Yeah.
With the people who are responsible for online journalism.
Maybe we'll change some minds that day.
I don't know.
Maybe we'll learn something. Maybe we'll learn something incredible that will blow our minds and change our minds too. You know?
But it's one more sign that the people on the margin are now part of the center and vice versa.
Yeah. Or we can get a gig at least.
Yeah, at least we can get a gig. And we're going to plug in our instruments and play loud.
Yeah, okay, something like that. Oh, wait, he wants to hold on. Wait a second. I got my cue. Wait, here we go. There. Wait. Oh, sorry, I'm not hitting my cues here. I'm plugging in my instrument now, Jay.
And
any second now.
Yeah. Oh, the
hello. There we go. Sorry.
The angry birds.
Adrian and I will never tire. Adrian doesn't cop to this one. He doesn't take blame for this.
You're turning this into a morning zoo radio show. That's what it's like now.
This episode.
Next
time I will be my usual very serious self.
Also in September of 2010, I'm co-organizing with Michelle McClellan of the Reynolds Institute at the University of Missouri J School. A rather interesting event. I'm very much looking forward to it. We're calling it Block by Block, a community news summit. And the idea is to bring together in one place for, I believe, the first time, people around the country who are starting these local news sites, like in Berkeley. Was that what you called it?
Yeah.
But similar to that.
Or NYU Local.
Or NYU Local. Which are scaled at the level of the neighborhood, the town.
Or the East Village local.
The East Village. Yeah. That you, in other words, they're scaled to the world that you walk the streets of. And they're, of course, flourishing, struggling and flourishing all over the country. And our idea was that simply by bringing these people who are struggling with the same problems together in one place, you almost don't even need a program because that itself would be so interesting and instructive and potent, and I think it will be, sort of like BloggerCon in 2003 was.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, We're doing some research beforehand. Michelle's doing most of it, but I'm sort of consulting with her about it, into what are these sites discovering in common? What are the problems that they are struggling with that they need help with? We're trying to make it demand-focused so that we know from them how such a meeting would be most useful. Like what?
Where will this happen?
This is going to happen in Chicago, which we picked just as a center, you know, a meeting point between coasts.
Yeah.
And I'm super excited about it in September. Yeah. And anyone who runs a site like that can request to be invited. It's an invitation only thing. We already have, because word is out about this, a lot of interest from some of the larger companies that want to know this space, like somebody from AOL wants to come, somebody from Yahoo wants to come.
Oh, there's your sponsorship right there.
There you go.
Yep.
Yeah. It's the BloggerCon model.
Lots of cupcakes.
Yeah. Right? You want to come? You know, it'll cost you. it's going to be.
So it's free to participate then.
We are raising money so that those who are trying to run these sites on a shoestring can afford to come.
But for people who have money...
Who have money will be asked to pay. People who don't, we'll try to get them there one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just going to be exciting.
Just curious, how much do you know? How much is it going to cost?
I don't know.
You might want to make it free and then ask people to donate money. I actually found that worked better with BloggerCon than...
Good idea.
Yeah. I mean, we charged... We had a price of $495 for the first one, and that knowing that we were going to negotiate,
right,
you know, basically on almost every case, we ended up taking in more money when we said it was free, and just asked people to make the contributions, even directly asked them, if they were from like Microsoft or IBM or Google.
Yeah, we
or whatever,
may take that route. Yeah.
They will be happy to give you $1,000,
right?
You know? And that way, you, instead of getting $495, you get $1,000. You know, whatever. It's best advice I could give. Well, that's my experience at least.
So,
I'd like to come. By the way,
that would be cool. That would be great. I would love that.
Can I get an invite?
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
Cool.
And
officially put on.
I think my only role besides co-organizing and helping to conceive of it is I'm going to do what you did, I believe, at the first BloggerCon, which is to moderate the last session where we kind of, all right, what did we learn?
Oh, that's good.
You know, which is
fun. Are we
going
to sing a song at the beginning of the conference?
I suggested the song.
You did?
And
which one? The first one?
I think so.
Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Oh, maybe it was the second one.
What was the song at the second one?
This Land Is Your Land.
Oh, I like that. That was good. The first one was Take Me Out to the Ball Game because the Red Sox were going into the World Series.
Uh-huh.
They were going into the playoffs, and they didn't make it. But next year they did.
I believe This Land Is Your Land was a covert political statement. It was right after the 2004 election, right before.
That was not a great election, I'm afraid.
That was a bleak election.
Yeah. So what's next on the list?
Something from your list.
Mr. List Man?
Something from your list.
Oh. You want something from my list?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Oh. Huh. Easy to read blogs?
A new blogging tool.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I've been talking so much, though. I thought maybe we would go to something... I mean, that one's going to necessarily involve me doing a lot of talking.
Well, we can...
I'm a believer in 50-50, you know, on these things.
Well, so here's something that I wanted to discuss with you. These are two problems that I have found myself continuously bringing up with people as I go to conferences, meet with various people who come through New York and are helping to reboot the news. When I give presentations, when I went to TBD.com, which is the new local news startup in Washington. That
TBD?
Yeah.
Not to be determined?
Yes.
That's what it is?
Yes.
What will it be when it's no longer TBD.com?
They decided to make TBD.com the name.
Really?
Yes, it started off as To Be Determined, but now they realize that's the name. TBD.com is a new startup that is funded by Albertin Communications, which is the same company that bankrolled the Politico. This company also owns the 24-hour news station in Washington and an ABC affiliate in Washington. Mm-hmm. And Jim Brady, who is the former executive editor of WashingtonPost.com, the website, who left that newspaper when a new editor came in, is the general manager and boss of this new news site, which is going to be web-only and compete directly with the Washington Post in metro coverage. Hmm. Several people who I know from Twitter and from reading the news, who are very sharp journalists without a lot of baggage, have been hired by Brady as he builds his team. So it's a startup that I'm watching closely because of the quality of the people involved and the fact that they do have money behind them. One of the interesting things about it is that when they settled on the name TBD.com, which is going to be the name of the site, they are going to rename the 24-hour news station in Washington, TBD. Hmm. So this news site is going to have a 24-hour news cable channel attached to it. So anyway, I was down there. When I went to the World Bank, I also visited them. And these are two problems that I continually raise with people in order to get their thinking and to share my thinking, and I want to share them with our listeners. The first is that in the old news system, as it evolved, we got used to mixing up two things, or three or four things, that are actually very different. News items that require no context to get are pushed into the same stream as news items that require some context to get and news items that require a lot of context to get, when actually these are very different kinds of news. So what I mean by news items that require no context to get is a double murder born of a love triangle is something that we can understand without knowing anything about the context of the people. It's just a human interest story that you can understand if you know human beings and their passions. A story about a bridge collapsing where the state has run out of money to fix bridges over a long period of time requires a little bit of context. We can understand a bridge collapse as a spectacular incident, but to know that there's been budget cutbacks and that the deferred maintenance and that's one of the reasons why the bridge collapsed, that's a little bit of context. Whereas a report on what the new healthcare bill that passed through Congress will actually do to your medical coverage, that actually requires a great deal of context. Mm-hmm. And in the way the news system was built before, we just pushed all these things into the same stream. But now we have to figure out how we can begin to treat them differently because the user needs to
use them. I see where you're going with this. That if you have a radio station, a website, a TV station, et cetera, you can choose the channel that can support each other. You can provide more context to the radio station.
That's right. And you can recognize that some news carries no context cost, and some news has a very high context cost.
No, there's so many things that support that belief that this is the right way to go. Like CNN reading tweets into the, you know, on right directly on the air, you know. It's the same thing I'm saying to the Times, is that you need to have your own Twitter clone. I mean, you need to develop the news system of the future based on what we've learned from the technology industry and what you know about the news industry. And all these things have to be, that's, I think, where the integration point's going to be, is that the online system is what pulls it all together.
Right. So in the online system, we can start to recognize that these are three different types of news.
Well, yeah, yes and no. I mean, how to put it? I mean, I don't know. I don't watch CNN anymore. I don't watch any cable news network, but I do watch quite a bit of video news. You know, so I think that you can hang video news off of the internet much more easily than you can do the opposite. In fact, I don't think you can. I mean, it's very hard to put a URL into a TV broadcast, but it's very easy to put a video into an internet broadcast or into an internet stream. And these devices, that was... Oh, I know there was one thing I probably should talk about. I don't really want to talk about the blogging tool yet.
Okay.
But I did get my mother an iPhone, and that was an eye-opener, right? Because here's media coming at you in a whole different way. But when you look at the parts, they're still the same things that you were doing all along. Like, she's discovered Kindle now, okay? Reading books is now, in like just in the last 30 days, has become a whole new experience. Yet, it's the same experience it always was. You're still reading a book.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that owning a TV station is a stepping stone, maybe. But I think knowing how to produce video... that fits into your...
Oh, yeah,
stuff.
I would agree with that, sure. Yeah.
That's a more futuristic idea.
Well, apart from that, I'm just saying that journalists have to learn to start distinguishing between these types of news based on what the context cost is. Because if they can do that, they can deliver the necessary context as well as the news. The other thing that I've been thinking about a lot since the Future of Context panel that I was on in Austin in the spring... is the old system treated every user as the same level user. But what we can do now, what we need to figure out how to do, is establish that actually the users of the new system are like players in a massively multiplayer game, in that there are different levels that they are at. And it would be, I think, fascinating to begin to develop a level-based system for using a news report, in which if I am a level 4 reader of the perfect game that was overturned by the umpire story, right, meaning I basically assimilated almost all of it, then what is new to me is totally different than if I'm a level 1 user of that story. And if we could begin to establish different levels for users of where they are in mastering a story, this would have a lot of different implications for how we deliver news to those users.
Well, that's an interesting story you mentioned there, the one with the umpire.
Wasn't it?
Well, yeah. It's an interesting story. Like, we didn't need a reporter for that one.
No.
No. All we needed was the video. And maybe, and users, like...
Well, there were press conferences and stuff, so we needed video from there.
Yeah, but the reporters, see, I think that ultimately, you know, when we were talking, I think it was the last episode, because we skipped the week, that where you were talking about the publication, I forget which one it was, the one that you're on the advisory board, where they're now using...
General Register Company.
Right.
25% time.
So I came at this and said, you know, nah, just do some research, find out what your customers want. Well, that got written up in a bunch of different places.
Yes.
I'm going to do it again. I don't think we need reporters.
No, come on, Dave.
Well, I don't think that... Okay, I knew I was going to be a controversial statement. No, it's not an oh, come on, Dave, Jay. I'm dead serious about this. Is that you talk
you
about...
You mean there are times when we do not need reporters. Don't you mean that?
Explain what I mean. That, you see, there's this sort of line that everybody likes to have. And I don't think the line's there, okay? So you talk about different levels of users, but implicit in that statement is that then there's another... That being a reporter isn't even a level. I'm worried.
I wouldn't say that.
Okay,
no,
okay.
No.
That's what I mean. Like, we don't need reporters in that. That we don't. Okay. They're just another kind of user.
Okay, if you mean a reporter is just a heightened case of a user, then I agree with that.
That's my point.
Sure.
Okay.
My point. I'm with you.
And I also don't see the value in having a delineation and saying the users are over here and the reporters are over here. I don't want it to be like you get to a point where I don't think it will be. Never mind what I want. I don't think it will turn. When it all shakes out, it'll turn out that, you know, users have to stay in their room and the reporters stay in theirs. I think that the fight that we're having here, to the extent that it is a fight or the argument, whatever, is over whether or not it's one big room and we're all in the same room, or whether there's two rooms and one of them is a playing field and the other one is a stadium. And I think it's the former, not the latter.
There's
one big room, and we're all in the room, and we slosh around in a million different ways. And sure, there's need for some people to be part of the infrastructure that helps keep the trains running on time, helps make everything work.
I'm with you on that.
Right.
And that's what our open newsroom experiment is going to be
exactly.
About.
So you see, that's what I meant when I said that we...
Okay.
You know, and I also meant... Before is that, you know,
because we don't need a separate class,
right? Well, the
separate
class
information
isn't
class
serving us, okay? Right? I mean, you know, I remember very clearly this is something interesting watching New York form into a possible tech mecca, which is a whole nother story, right? And I was there at the beginning, not at the beginning of Silicon Valley, I missed that by two generations, okay? But I was there at the beginning of several companies, it's you know, when they were like. Just me and one other person, or me and me, right? And then we add another person, five more people, and so forth. All of a sudden, there are 60 people in the building, and it's a company, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember very clearly when I realized that this is starting to behave like a us versus them thing, and how wrong that was. Because when you can actually see it happening, when, you know, this whole line, all of a sudden, you've built to a point where there's enough sort of there's enough gravity around the center of this thing so that people feel drawn into it and they feel protective of the whole thing, right?
Right.
That all of a sudden now they draw the distinction between themselves and everybody else. But you can see it happening here in New York, too.
That's the birth of the savvy right
but
there.
But it's not good. It's a bad thing.
That's
you know?
Where it starts.
Right. And it's the thing that's being exploded everywhere. It's not a good time to be building one. Because almost the instant you actually start building it, it's going to get routed around. So you might as well not even build it, you know. That's the whole thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I still think there's something to this idea of levels of users.
Sure.
And I also think that these two types of news, some of which require context, some of which don't, is an important distinction that we got to sort of work into the new tools for news that we built.
Keep coming back to the let's try to remember to come back to that perfect game, because I think any baseball fan could have written the story on that one.
Yeah.
Right? The outrage. I mean, it's a beautiful story, right?
But part of the reason for that, Dave, is that the master rules for baseball and for understanding baseball are well distributed throughout the baseball watching population.
Yeah.
Everyone has them. They're not a secret. There's almost nothing that is inside knowledge in baseball,
right?
Except for secrets, like real secrets, like
but
who's using drugs.
What guarantee do you have that the reporters are actually, you know, I have very little faith that when I read these stories that the reporters are actually either understanding the rules or accurately reflecting them. In other words, you're
in
saying...
baseball?
No, not baseball. Oh. I'm talking about other places. Like you're saying, in baseball, we all understand it. That's why we don't need a reporter. But
right.
When you're talking about the, you know, the disappearing economy,
right? Well, they may not. They may not share that.
No, they may be very dishonest. You know, they may tell you the exact opposite. I mean, this just happened.
A really
to me.
Good reporter.
This just
does,
happened to me
though.
This week. No, yeah, there are a lot of really bad reporters, Jay. There was this
one
thing.
Really
I wrote this
ones.
Piece called "Is." New York, the next tech mecca, right?
We talked about it.
Right. 90 seconds left. And at the end of the piece, I said, no, New York's not the tech. Now, somebody writes an article in some kind of newspaper, and I don't remember which one it was. It's all about me, and I'm the foil. I'm the jerk who says New York is the next tech mecca. Even though I directly said it is not the next tech mecca.
Mm-hmm.
This is my experience of reporting. This is why I don't trust those bastards.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know what?
60 seconds.
I don't think it is the next tech mecca.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so, you know, it's we have to develop a lot more complicated systems here so we can verify things so much better than we can.
The art of verification. That's what journalism is.
You know, one of the early phrases in the blogosphere, Jay, this I think came from Doc Searles, was, we're going to fact check your ass.
Yeah.
And it was a really good sentiment. Somewhere along the line, it got lost. But that was one of the ethos of what
that
we're doing.
That came from Ken Lane.
Did it? I always thought it came from Doc Searles.
I'm pretty sure it's Ken Lane.
Yeah, I know somebody else got credit for it, but I'm going to give it to Doc, unless I hear otherwise. I'm sure we will at this point. I just got to say, I've been learning in the last few weeks that a lot of people I know are listening to this podcast, and cool. I'm really, really pleased about that. I just want to say,
10 seconds.
Hey there, everybody.
We know you're out there.
Yeah, we know you're out there. Have a great week.
Another good show. Bye,
thanks,
Dave.
Jay. Bye.